breaking records in the city where I live. Everybody, welcome to the Breaking Records podcast. I'm your host, Kelly K. Fresh Frazier, and the guest for this episode is Chicago OG footwork, juke, and house music DJ and producer, Traxman. As a staple of the Chicago dance music scene for decades now, Traxman has been one of the co-founders of the Ghetto DJs clique, and also a member of DJ Rashad and DJ Spin's Tech Life crew, along with the founder of the Tech DJs. Along with being an important part of the birthing of the Dance Mania imprint. Having released music on countless record labels, including recently dropping Tech Vision Volume 2 via Tech Life, Traxman continues to constantly drop music via his Bandcamp at traxman1.bandcamp.com. During our conversation, Traxman gave us a history lesson about growing up in Chicago and entering the dance music world and establishing himself as a staple of the city. There is so much history shared here on this episode for anybody that loves dance music from the Midwest. All right, let's get into the interview with Traxman. Yeah, I've long been a fan of like everything the whole Tech Life crew's been doing. I love the whole you know, footwork sound, and I know you've been around for a while with, you know, footwork and juke, and, you know, being from that, I'm from here in Detroit, you know, Detroit, Chicago have a lot of similarities or cousins in a way in regards to juke. And ghetto tech and everything, so it's something that I, you know, I'm definitely familiar with. And you got this new EP, the Tech Vision Volume 2, and I've been like super obsessed with the track For the Life, man. That track just goes hard, man. I love it.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
So like, man, this is like the first time I got to like really interview any of you guys, and
okay,
there's so much like I want to talk to you about in regards to this footwork sound, because what I love about it was like, yes, it's sort of like a continuation of ghetto tech and juke, and has all these different influences, but it was like so raw. It was something so fresh, but it was so raw. It had like those rough edges on it. It wasn't Absolutely. So polished. It was so grimy, you know, like looking yeah. back to like when that sort of era of things with, you know, footwork was coming out, you know, sort of what's your thoughts about that? What's your memories about this sort of footwork age coming out?
Well, how can I say? Well, I say it's exciting because one, the music is way beyond of what we think is way bigger than us. And the footwork sound is really a sound that's been around for 40-something years.
Yeah.
The reason why I say that is because without house music, we wouldn't have none of this.
Right.
Without influences of techno, we wouldn't have this. The influences of Steve Silk, Curly, Steve Poindexter, Farley, Jack Master Funk, to Fast AK, Alexi, Tyree Cooper, Derek May, Juan Atkins, Kevin Sanders, and Eddie Folks, and Jeff Mills, a lot of the influences. Now, footwork, that name was just, it's actually not, it's just a genre that came about some just 10 years ago, from the cats out of Europe in that Planet New Records, by Barry Davis.
Yeah.
We wasn't even calling it footwork tracks as one genre. It was footwork is just the style of the dance.
Yeah.
Let's just like, just as with Detroit, with the ghetto tech sound and jit, you know what I'm saying? And what do you do to jit? Footwork to it. So
right.
It's been here, and what makes the music so exciting is through the speeds of the music, but then you have the test makers of the sound, as your DJ Rashad's, your RP Bulls, myself, DJ Spin, the Gampmas, the DJ Clint. And you know, the new guys, the DJ Manny's, the Earls, and the Keys, the EQIs, the Q-Neeks, the Jalen's. So, you know, it's so cool, and it's so much to it, you know, and especially when it's being done around the world, of course, Europe and Asia, that's like mad exciting. But yeah, man, it's so much to it than what we think.
You know, when you kind of go back to the 90s and you have all those Dance Mania records, you have the stuff coming out of Detroit, and you have so many of these records, and they're just very raw. They're not overly produced, you know. There's a lot of speed, there's a lot of energy to it. And over the years, you know, and even when you listen to your newer stuff, that's still there, dude. How important is to keep that rawness with this music?
Great question, buddy. Man, that's a goddamn great question. Well, you know, and as you know, if you know, I worked at Dance Mania, too. I worked at Barney's Distribution in the 90s.
Yeah.
From 1994 to 1998, people know the bio of me. So I was there when a lot of the top music started to come out, and Ray Barney was bringing it out. And I said this to Ray Barney. I'm like, Ray, you know, maybe in some couple of years or 20 years from now, this music is going to be highly accepted. And he knows, Ray Barney's known. So, hey, man, you know, we're just trying to make some money, you know. The record does good. No, that's Ray Barney. Hey, the record does good. It does good. It doesn't. Hey, we tried, you know. Yeah. But I think this is going to do well. And sure, the hell enough, it did. And but what really made those tracks stand out, and I carry that to this day, is Minimum Sounds. Minimum Sounds. If you listen to a DJ Dion record,
right,
versus a DJ Funk record, both are some of the greatest producers in this music. Now, let's say me and DJ Funk grew up together, Charles Chambers, me and him, 36-year dudes. His music, Funk's music, is more of a party, like a Luke versus 69 Boys versus some Two Live Crew stuff.
Right.
And with a lot of the Work That Motherfucker and a lot of early house music, you know what I'm saying? The tracky track stuff. You know, he would mix and it sounds like one big orgy party, which everything fits like a club. Totally great. But then you have DJ Dion on the other end. Very stripped down, 909, vocal, freaky vocals, nice ill ass lines of shit. Not a lot of sounds, but stripped down to the point. In your face, boom! You know that's ghetto house for you. Not saying either one is better than another. I'm not gonna say hey, the Dion's music was better than Funk's, or Funk's was better than Dion's, but they both play a role. For who both hit, for one person who had that funk flair, and that Dion flair who cut through the middle of everybody was Jammin' Gerald. That's who our style comes from, him. Gerald, because Gerald was—he never added too much. It was never too much. It was never too little. It was like just right, and that sound the sound was so gritty, you know, and we tried our best to get the sound clean, and we was one straight from the MPC to the through the mixer to the DAT players, you know, or probably from that to a cassette to cassette to a DAT player. So it was all types of crazy sounds and things, and how we was recording the music, or if some things were a mistake in the recording processes of the music sometimes. And it's like, nah, leave it there. People like that. Like, people are going to dig this sound.
Right.
So, you know, I totally understand. That's my shot at it. Yeah, man. Just keeping that original sound.
Being someone who's been around and seen the growth of all these sort of different sounds that are kind of encapsulated into this, you know, bit of a, you know, genre, you know, what was sort of, you know, when you look back at the beginning, like, what is your favorite memories of that time, you know, seeing the evolution, the beginning of a lot of this stuff?
Well, man, me, DJ Q from Dance Mania, DJ Amar, you know, one of our brothers we lost just back in March, did a lot of techno stuff.
Yeah.
And a lot of us, you know, growing up, you know, we you know, just being in these areas or just being at these parties. Like, I had the greatest opportunities to play at raves, the raves back in 93, 94, 95, all through the 90s, and playing with Thomas Banglar from Def Punk.
Yeah.
Helping him program his, what was that, the R70, because he was a fan then of us at Dance Mania when he was doing all that records thing. Playing with, like, some of the greatest, I can write a storybook on some of the greatest producers and DJs, from Justin Long, Derek Carter, Roy Davis, Andre Harris, DJ Spanky, Pierre from Future, Earl Farley, oh my goodness, I could go on and on and on. From jumping out of my body, being a whatever producer and DJ, it's like, okay, whatever. But I'm such a fan of these other people, even Carl Coxes and all these great people, and seeing the Nina Kravitz now, you know, because she's a big, you know, I didn't know she was a fan.
Right.
You know, when I met her, like, whoa, you know, like I really love your music. Like, wow. I'm just a dude in a room trying to make some great, in my studio. In a room back then, trying to make music, and in a studio now, just even if I'm mid-40s, damn near 50s, I still have that same compassion. Well, passion. I think I'm kind of lucky, man, because I had an opportunity to do all these genres, you know what I'm saying, of dance, especially coming out of Chicago, especially when it comes to the beat machines. You know, I just always been totally down with that, you know.
When did you start releasing your own tracks?
Oh, wow. 1994 and 95. I was always making my own music, but I was always doing production with a lot of people. It was funk, Houseman, Paul Johnson. I just started making my own, like, put my own records out, like, till 94, 95.
And, you know, when you, like, what was sort of what were you doing at the time? What was sort of, like, your mentality about making tracks, you know, putting out your own releases during that time when you were first doing it?
I just wanted to be a part. And what the records I was hearing, Virgo Go Wild tracks, Vince Lawrence, Marshall Jefferson, Sleazy D's, I've Lost Control. I was already DJing, but what made me wanted to make the music, make those type of tracks, was the music I was hearing, and I was 16 years old when I first went to the Music Box. 16. And seen Ron Hardy for the first time. Like, holy shit, you know, this is Ron Hardy. And he was playing more beat tracks then. It was the beat track era that was grabbing guys like us. You know, so that it is a very beautiful time, man. I wish I could go back.
Well, you know, what do you think was so, because there's so much history when it comes to Chicago and dance music. You know, why do you feel like all that music was so special and really touched people around the world?
Wow. Oh, man. I think Chicago is a special place, man. As well as Detroit.
Yeah.
So I would have to say there's something in the water with Chicago and Detroit, with the Midwest. There's something about the Midwest sound. Like I said, Chicago, Detroit, hell, St. Louis, Ohio, you know, just the land of funk. It's right. Something about the Midwest, this water, this Michigan water, lake water. It's something about it. Whether it's Chicagoans and as Detroitians, you know, it's something about the grit and the grime of this music that really grabs the people around the world, because it's crazy when I'm in China. You know, mad cats like, yo, play me some Detroit techno. What? Or, yo, play me some Chicago house music. Yeah. Okay. No doubt. You know, and it man, that's a cool thing, man. A cool thing.
Right.
Because, you know, you would never think people around the world feel this way, you know. And, you know, and I try my best to keep it going. You know, Sim, just keep it going. Keep it going.
You know, being someone, you know, you're from the west side of Chicago. In mm-hmm. regards to, you know, all the music that's come out of Chicago, you know, what do you feel like the upbringing of the city did to the music that people from Chicago make?
Freedom. Feeling free. The music makes people free. Young, old, black, white, Spanish, straight, gay, doesn't matter. All around the world, you can play this music from 8 to 80, blind, crippled, and crazy. And people, it just makes people feel free. Dance erratically, and feel free. That's what the music is. That's what it is.
How do you sort of maintain that freedom, though, you know, within your own community? Is there any way to sort of police yourselves?
In the community? Well, it's always been like an escape for some of us that's you know, DJs and producers and all, you know, because so much going on in the hood, so much craziness, but no, it's an escape.
When, you know, how would you describe, you know, your upbringing? You know, what kind of a kid were you? You know, what was sort of, you know, when you're looking back as a kid, you know, what's your, you know, thoughts about growing up?
Oh, man. I had a great childhood with the music. And I was always a little dude that was always, I was always totally by myself. Totally. And it was always me and music. Music, just music. Me and a radio with a tape deck. And I would just record dance music, dance songs, Double Dutch Bus, Don't Stop the Music by Weak Whack, Martin Circus, Disco Circus, Can't Have Your Cake and Eat It Too, Kraftwerk, Numbers, Computer World, Man and Machine, B-52s. I was listening to so much music at that time, and due to my uncle, my mom's youngest brother, like he's just a couple years older than me, And he was DJing at that time. And he had a girlfriend whose brother was gay. And that's the first time I ever heard of The Warehouse. Well, I was a little kid when it was going, like 9 and 10 years old. So I could never have gone there at that time. You know? And he would go there and he would come home with these excellent fucking records. Because, you know, one thing I learned about gay dudes being, they know fucking music. Like, holy shit, they know music. Bro, he would bring home so much, so many records from West End Records, the West End label, Atlantic 12 inches, Nancy Murray Can't Believe, oh my God, Heat You Up, Melt You Down, oh my fucking God, Ralph Self, Do It To The Music. Oh, some of the greatest music. Shit. Makes you feel so fucking good, man. And this was stuff that was played at The Warehouse and at Paradise Garage with Larry Levan over there in New York. So I learned that music. It was good music. Some of it I couldn't get with, but for the strange, weird reason, I didn't like disco then. I didn't. If it wasn't electronic. Like, a lot of the music, like, when I start to get a little older, you know, 9 and 10, 11, I was always buying my own records, and I will buy these records I was hearing from WBMX on the Hot Mix 5 in, like, 82, 83, and 84. Yeah. And I will buy those records, and those was, like, the Italo Disco records, Italo Disco stuff. It cost an arm and a goddamn leg from a regular $5 oil, but you're paying $7. For these records. So we know they meant something, and it was imported from over there. I'm Hungry, Alexander Robotic, shit like that. So it was a weird era of me growing up as a little kid, because it was it was the new wave era also too.
Yeah.
Lobster, I'm Spasticus, The Clash, which was punk. And a lot of that music, man. So, man, and then, oh my God. The birth of MTV, Friday Night Videos, Friday Night Videos, Channel 5. So we just watch it. It was just that era of growing up as a kid, listening to music. Music was, oh my God, man. Every fucking thing, man, from a rhythmics to Thriller to Big Country to fucking Def Leppard, man, to oh my goodness, Earth, Wind & Fire to. Bro, I was just drenched at that time in the early mid '80s in so much culture of music.
Yeah.
You know, so you know, as a little kid and like I said, with house music being there, because I always do panels speaking about this, and I know even with the older guys in house music, and I tell them, because they piss me off, and I tell them, it's too many old people representing right now. I like what house music, what made house music so rich and pure then was, it was young.
Yeah.
Young. Same as with techno. Techno started young, three young guys that went to high school. Young people. And it kept it young. And you have newer producers, and just as with house music now, and, you know, as with ghetto house. No, ghetto house is the bastard child of house music. It's the ugly child, and now the bastard child has had children, which is juke and footwork.
Right.
You know, so it's the bastardizing. You know, the bastardizing of this stuff. You know, but yeah.
How important do you feel it is that in these sort of genres that you're a part of, that there is a passing of the torch to a newer generation, the younger producers that are, you know, making music that is, you know, very much paying tribute to where you came from?
Well, me, I'm very ecstatic about giving just giving the next generation the torch, because without them, man, the music is gonna die.
Right.
It's gonna die. You know, we can't hold it forever. Now, that is a problem with house music in Chicago. You know, if you look, as you can see, in house, the older cats, the same guys that were there 30 years ago are still the same guys there now. Like, because it's a political thing. It's politics and a lot of bullshit wrapped up with house music in Chicago. So they're gonna go to the very people who's a figure that's gonna do it. Even though, hey, you guys been in it 30 years, and it's like, no, house music is not about what, not just about what happened then. Or, no, we get that's just like hip hop. No, you don't see Kool Herc or Bam or Flash shitting on your Q-Berts or your EPMDs or your Nas's or or the groups or the DJs. It's a different era. We can't know if it was still stuck in their era, we'll be rapping like DJ Hollywood. So get down on the motherfucker, cause everybody will rather be rapping like this. Jump the ball, the jump don't twist. Everybody would rapping like that.
Right.
I'm just keeping it 100. So it had to go through the changes. It had to go to the Houdini, the UTFOs, the EPMDs, the Beastie Boys, the merging of the first rap, LL rap group, which is one of my favorites, Beastie Boys, you know what I'm saying, to a Public Enemy, your political ends, to your back to the braggadocious groups of EPMDs, to the L. Assassin lyricists of your Kanes and Rakims, and you know what I'm saying? And on to back to the groups of Wu-Tangs and the Dog Pound and NWAs and stuff. You know, we need that. Everything was a change, as is it in house music, as it is with techno. It's just, certain people, and I tell them, like, don't you do that, it's going to rebel against you. It's going to rebel against you, so don't be hard on that sound.
Just a moment ago, you were, just breaking down all the stuff that you experienced when you were a kid, and that was like, that was during that time when you had those countercultures of all different types sort of breaking out. You had dance music, you had hip hop, you had punk, you had hardcore. You know, they all sort of represented a similar type of person, but like for different races and backgrounds or sexuality and whatnot.
Oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely.
What
I think that was a beautiful era.
Right. Why do you feel like that happened at that particular point in time? You know, why was that like going into the 70s, going into the, or like from the 70s, going into the 80s, you know, why do you feel like all that happened at that particular time?
Well, you got to think about that. You got to think if you were around in that era, or if you read about the era or was told about the era. I know as a kid, as a little kid, I had a great childhood, dog. Man, I had a dope-ass childhood. And even though we were poor as fuck, as kids, you're not even looking at that. You know, you're looking at what's around you. And it was so many things going on in the world at that time and in America. You know, we had just dealt with the disco sucks and the backlash of disco music. And everything was so, how can I say, so dimming in 79, 80, 81. Like, if you remember, or like I say, if you go do radio, it wasn't so many things popping at that time in 80. Besides Off the Wall, Michael Jackson was popping.
Right.
I was like, Back in Black or something, ACDC. And but electronic music wise, that was something that was bubbling in the underground. You know, from the CBGBs in New York, of them having that punk scene and it blowing up as big as it did, and it's so big that people started to go from that to new wave. And from the disco sucks era, from the underground parties, you know, you got to understand that, like I said, something was at a need. There was a cry out for something. We didn't know what it was. Nobody knew what it was then. But it, whatever was going on at that time, it was bringing people together musically. It was the new wave, the disco, the black, the disenfranchised black people, meaning the shitted on white people, you know, or the pissed off Spanish cats that just want to get the hell out. You know what I'm saying? And what house music did in the early days, from what I know, is, you know, and with the gay guys, was in the warehouse, was majority black and gay. It was black and gay.
Yeah.
So, but what it did, it brung, of course, it was going to bring other different gay people or different people who was in that scene go there. Until 84, when Robert Williams decided he had to leave the warehouse, the original warehouse, and Frankie started the power plant. And when he did, when Frankie was starting his own club, that's when Robert decided to do another club, and that's when he got Ron Hardy. Now, Ron Hardy was the split between the gay crowd and the straight crowd, because the straight crowd started to get more pulled in. We catching that bug, like, yo, this DJ's the illest, man. What the wham, he's the illest. But now, let's not forget, 1982, 83, 84, 85, 86, WBMX and Hot Mix 5 was in full throttle. That's how we learned how to mix, us kids at that time, because we couldn't go to those parties, the warehouse. Those are for the older people, older, you know, the teenagers or shit that was a couple years older than us. So we couldn't go. So what we would get, what they thought they'd listen, what we had a net of what they played on the radio, which was T-Shop Lee and Farley Jack, Master Funk, and Steve Zill Curly's, and Mickey Mix and Oliver's, and Kenny Jam and Jason's. See, bro, I can break all this shit down. Bro, I have to do a part two to you with this shit.
Nice. When it comes down to, like, the early years of dance music, house music, you know, okay, whatever you want to call it, you know, it was really built on, like you've said many times, you know, the black community, the gay community. How important do you, you know, think it is to that, even here in 2019, that we remember that those communities help build, you know, dance music?
Oh, man, it's very important. It is so important. It was the cry of the lost children. That's what I call it. The cry of the lost children. And that's still happening to this day, even in 2019, because there's so many scenes, so many of them, you know, and young people are playing such a big role, you know. There's a kid in fucking Japan right now in his room who loves us, you know. And it's like, that is so dope. Or a kid in Afghanistan that's in his parents' home, he's an aspiring dance house DJ or techno DJ, and we are inspiring him. And the music, we're showing him that it's freedom. This is fucking freedom. You want to feel free? Turn on some 125 shit or some 140, 160 shit. You'll feel free. It's freedom.
You know, coming into this era, you know, you're a part of, you know, the Tech Life crew. This is something that Spin and Rashad started. You know, why do you feel like this crew started? You know, what was the meaning behind the creation of this crew?
How can I say? I was actually there from day one in 2004. Now, I've been knowing Spin since 97 and Rashad since 97. And since they were kids. No, they're like my little brothers. And Tech Life was originally called Ghetto Technicians. And that was started 2004 when Spin and Rashad decided to leave Beatdown, which was DJ Clint's group. No, they all started that. And what they were doing was something that was so totally different. And I was always there, and even when they came up with the name, because I think, who was that? G gave him that name, Godfather, out of Detroit.
Yeah.
Gave him the name. So, like, would you just, ghetto technician. So, it was cool. So he told, when Spin told us that, like, Godfather called that, we're going to call this group Ghetto Technicians. I mean, well, that sounds like a dope-ass name, number one, Ghetto Technicians. Dope. So we got to remember Spin and Rashad. Rashad was working on he was taking trips. No, he was in Chicago. He was working on a boat, in Hawaii. And he would always take jobs that was out of town. And Spin and a couple of guys, we would hold it down. And when Rashad officially came back to stay, he got a job here. He was working as an orderly. And he was like, man, I'm going to play some stuff. And I was like, play it. And the shit's like, holy shit, Rash, what the fuck is this? What's wrong? No, this shit is dope, man. I never heard a track like this. He's like, we're going to play it for the footworkers, you know what I'm saying? Because we was never making music to be like, hey, the world is going to love this. No. We were just making tracks like, man, King AG, he's going to go crazy off this. Or Lightbulb from the era, like, those guys, them motherfuckers, they're going to go nuts. Queen Crystal, she's going to lose it off this track. I know she's going to love this track. So a lot of the tracks that you guys are hearing were nothing but ideas, was stuff we wanted to play at parties.
Yeah.
And when the merging of Manny and Earl, because I met Manny and Earl like 08, and they were kids. I'm like, man, I didn't know these guys were that good, though. Like, goddamn, they're good. And that made me really start stepping my game up. And I was just playing this to RP Bull. I'm like, man. And RP was, at that time, he was making tracks whenever he wanted to. But Rashad, something about Rashad, man. Something about him. Like, so special. Like, man. I would always say it, like, this is a special dude right here, man. This dude is real special with his music. And between me and him, we would have the biggest catalog of tracks coming into a party to play together. Right. We, like, make the most tracks. Like, tracks. Like, how many tracks you got? So you, like, you know what, man? Yo, man, you ain't shit. You, like, you ain't shit. We're going to battle. I mean, and me and Rashad would battle. But it would only be between me and him. Nobody would know it. But we're battling so hard, the dancers going crazy, yo. Fuck, this is the best shit. And they don't know we're going at it. And then we might tell Earl or Manny Sir Timo, like, hey, they battling, man. They battling each other. He's like, oh, Manny. Like, bring your best two, I got my best two. You bring your best two, I got my best two. Ah, you got me on that one. Oh, I like that one. That was dope, man. Then what he'll start playing my tracks against me. Then I'll start playing his tracks against him. Ah, just good times, man. Just fucking good times. I miss Rashad, man. Just a beautiful soul, man. A dude that was took in too soon.
Right.
Mad talent. Just a breath of fresh air, man. Just talented. And Manny and Spin and Phil and Heavy and even Slick Shooter, even Triple Train out of New York, and to PayPal in Germany, all the way to Weezy in Japan. And I've dealt with all these guys. Beautiful, beautiful guys, man. So talented. But then you got other crews. You got JBW, you have Beatdown, you have Booty Tune, you have Lit City, you know, so many crews and D-160 and all these guys. Just some ill talent.
You know, what is it? Do you feel like was so special about the music that you guys were making, and how it just sort of expanded to other people across the globe? You know, because you know you have all the stuff that Tech Life did, and then you know a lot of you guys also you know worked with Hyperdub, and you had all this stuff kind of going just everywhere around the world. And it always just kind of bubbled on the underground. You know, what do you feel like was so special about it?
Oh, man. People yearn for more stuff. And they want to know, I guess a lot of people want to know what's next, the next big thing. Or, you know, it's kind of hard to break that down. Because, no, and it's nothing bad. But it's like, yo, no, it's kind of hard to break down. But, you know, it's so much to expect from this music. And especially with Tech Life, you know, I'm just really proud of on how people, everywhere I go around the world, man, it's just like these people really love Tech Life. Like, damn, whoa, t-shirts and all, you know, stickers everywhere. I can't really, it's kind of hard to explain that, but it feels great though.
Do you feel like this style of music has gotten the credit it deserves?
No, it really hasn't. I can actually tell you that it really hasn't gotten it because, you know, I think certain people, you know, people start grabbing hold of these genres, and it's so much. Oh man, it's just so much that they're not seeing or hearing. You know, it's beyond the galaxy. It's beyond a galaxy. You know, like even with the music. My tracks, like, what's crazy is, like, with the music I'm doing now, and, you know, I'm doing other stuff. I'm doing techno or whatever. And, you know, my buddy, EQY, DJ EQY, and I use him as a hyper. So he played my stuff. And a lot of people don't even know that I made a lot of these, like, a lot of the new footwork tracks. And I try to make music that's interesting. I like interesting music. You know, I'm just pushing the envelope. Like if people listen to what's that record, The Minor Tracks Man 1, or my favorite is The Minor Tracks Man 2. That's my personal favorite. But everybody says 1. But yeah, man, I think just going for something just totally different. I love being out of the box making music. Totally love being out of the box.
What is it about it? All this, like you said just a moment ago, that people are missing, or maybe they don't understand, or they just don't know about. You know, what are those aspects of it, of that culture, do you feel like they're missing?
How can I say? They're missing the, how can I say? The emotion. The music is so emotional. Also, besides all, you peel back the layer of all that roughness of everything, it's emotional, man. When you look at the dancers, the footworkers, the dancers, bro, they're very emotional people, man. When they hit the floor, it's like this is their way of fighting.
Right.
This is their way of fighting. They take it out to footwork, and they'd be very, very passionate about it, dog.
Yo, that's the show. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Breaking Records Podcast, brought to you by Fresh is the Word. Hosted and produced by Kelly K. Fresh Frazier, empowered by Anchor at anchor.fm/breakingrecords. Breaking Records is available on all major streaming platforms. Please rate and review on Apple Podcasts and Stitcher. If you want to support Breaking Records and Fresh is the Word, please consider pledging via Patreon at patreon.com/freshistheword. Follow Breaking Records on social media, on Twitter at Breaking Rec Pod, on Instagram at Breaking Records Podcast, and join the Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/freshistheword. For more information about Fresh is the Word and Breaking Records, along with the Renaissance Soul Podcast, plus a collection of pop culture articles and reviews, please visit freshisthepodcast.com. Thank you for listening and your support. Goodbye and good night. Breaking records in the city where I live.